Good evening. I'm Eric A. Sinani, and this is Unplugged. No filters, no spin, just the truth, folks, and always the truth. Perspective and real conversations that truly matter to you and to America. Tonight, we're stepping into a very powerful and controversial crossroads of conversation where science meets faith. Go figure, science and faith. The Bible versus Darwinism, and where your understanding of God may never be the same. So buckle up, folks, because that's what we're going to do tonight. To get ready. Don't be triggered. Our guest tonight is an innovator. He's a thinker, and he's a man who bridges two worlds where most people can't even possibly even fathom. This man bridges them and has created a path that we believe is worthy enough to bring it to you right here. The world of science and the world of spirit. His name is Richard Koontz. He's a Jersey guy like myself, so that kind of helped get him on the show here. He's a chemical engineer turned transformational consultant. He's an author and a hypnotist who's helped thousands and thousands overcome stress, anxiety, and build self-worth and find clarity where clarity just doesn't seem to exist. For two decades, he's directed the Biofeedback Center of New Jersey, and he is a top consultant for hypnosis, and he's pioneered many, many programs. He's merged neuroscience, nutrition, and emotional mastery. I find that to be really, really great. If you paid attention to a previous couple episodes, we've talked a lot about science and the holistic approach of science, not just actual ones and zeros and cellular, but there's a spiritual basis behind it. His latest work, Prosper with the Power of God on Your Side, is a bold, very bold, and it was a good read, very bold exploration into the fusion of faith and physics. So buckle up, this is a good one, folks. It's a redefinition of what divinity means in the modern world, in modern thinking. Written years before Stephen Hawking's final revelations, which are interesting, our final reflections, this book presents an idea that both radical and simple, that God is the universe and may not be all separate, but may be one. That very laws of science might be the blueprint of creation. I'm fascinated for this conversation. God knows, literally God, pun, who knows where it's going to go. It doesn't ask you to abandon your faith. Nobody wants you to abandon your faith. It asks you to elevate your faith, to elevate it, to move beyond doctrine and to beyond all the division. And you know, folks, there's a lot of division, and move into total awareness. So Richard Koontz is going to join me tonight to discuss that very science and being spiritual and the power of awakening the divine within. Let's bring him in. I can't possibly wait. Let's get him in here. Richard, welcome.
Thank you. Great to be here.
What a pleasure. What a pleasure. What a pleasure. So just so you know how this works on the show is we have segments, about 4 or 5 segments based on time. We are a live TV radio show, and then we also are a podcast afterwards. So we're available for download, but we are live, and we reach a lot of people in upwards of 2 to 5 million on a live. So it just depends. Maybe this one, but God, will be a big one. So we're going to have 4 or 5 segments. I'm going to answer a question and we're just going to go back and forth with it. There's no sandbag or gotcha questions here. I remind everybody that the Federal Communications, FCC, is not a fan of words that we shouldn't use, as you know. So unlike a podcast, but unlike a YouTube show, we don't get filtered out. So whatever you're going to talk about is going to get heard. So you don't have to filter. But I'd like to give you about 30 seconds to a minute, Richard, to tell about yourself what I did not already include in your intro.
Well, I'm a chemical engineer. And as a chemical engineer, you try to figure things out. You look for answers where there generally aren't any answers. And as a chemical engineer, I was a very shy guy growing up. And I thought there was more to life than just being in a cubicle calculating sizes of pipes and turbines and things like that. And I got interested in the topic of hypnosis And eventually that led into biofeedback.
And we talked previously off screen in the green room about biofeedback.
Right.
I'm excited about that.
So I opened up my own, I left the engineering field and opened up my own practice here in Middletown.
And good old New Jersey, Middletown, New Jersey.
Good old, yep,
Jersey
good old
in the house.
Right across from Dunkin' Donuts. I got addicted to those.
I'm a Dunkin' guy. We're trying to get them as a sponsor. Dunkin', we want you. Starbucks keep reaching out, but I don't want Starbucks. We want Dunkin'.
Yeah. So, you know, as a youngster, I was always very religious. I would actually walk half a mile to go to church every day and sang on the choir.
I was an altar boy. I feel you, Rich. I feel you.
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely. I praised God. God is the only one, you know, and he's our savior. And all the indoctrination and all that stuff went in the brain, you know, since the age of 4 or 5. And I remember even in college, I'd stay up, my roommate and I, he was a religious nut like I was, and we'd stay up at 3 a.m. in the morning trying to convince the Jewish segment, our friends there, that in their lost ways and they should believe in Christ. And I was
a fascinating thing. I think, can we spend a moment talking about that before we even get into our segments?
Sure.
When it comes to the Israel and Judaism, what are your thoughts on that? Because this is a major issue going on right now that a lot of people are talking about or not talking about, but I want to talk about it if you do.
You're asking about the faith of Judaism?
Yes. And Israel, the existence of Israel and what's going on in the whole gamut of stuff since you brought it up. And religion is a hot topic right now.
Well, you know, religion since day number one has, in my opinion, and there may be people that would disagree with me, has created more killings and wars, and it's an ego thing. You know, religion is nothing but a damn ego thing. I am Jew. I am evangelical Christian. I am a Catholic. This is how they get there. This is how we learn our identity. And our self-worth comes from our belief in that we have the right religion and the only religion, and everybody else is a heathen.
Right. And I think it's a very, very profound thought, because I think that religion is a topic that has to be discussed. It is, it's on our money. It's in everything we believe, and I think we have to respect everybody. But I think may I ask, are you Catholic?
I was evangelical Christian,
okay.
Evangelical Church of Christ.
I told people I was an altar boy, I'm from Jersey. I thought everybody was Catholic in Jersey. Yeah. I didn't even know there was any. Oh, that in Judaism in Teaneck. Town over from me. I don't know. What say you on this whole thing before we get into our segments? You see all
again?
The stuff going on with Israel and Gaza and being a state and all of these politicians pandering to Israel, you know?
I mean, it doesn't matter what war we're talking about. We're talking about the religious suppression and genocide and it's just the stupid, ignorant level of ego trying to. You look at Islam and the factions there. Their idea, like the Ayatollah and those, really, their idea is that if you're not in their religion, you are a heathen.
And right. Right.
You don't deserve to live. You don't deserve to breathe. You don't deserve to eat.
Right. Right. Which is just if you're a religious person, right, a spiritual person, then wanting somebody to be a heathen, to be dead, or to be whatever because they are not with you, then you're not a spiritual person. I'm sorry.
They're not spiritual at all. There's nothing spiritual connected to this at all.
Because the Ten Commandments make it very clear. Thou shalt not kill. There are exceptions. I hope to believe, as a military veteran myself, and deployments, etc. But I mean, Thou Shalt Not Kill is a very, very serious one. And I think that everybody should be following that one. And if you are wishing death on others because they are not you, then you are not spiritual.
Definitely not. Absolutely.
Right. So. All right. Well, now that we got that out of the way, let's roll in segment one. We're going to talk about the crossroads of science and faith. All right. Since the draw of time, humanity has tried to separate the measurable from the mystical. But what if they never were separate to begin with? Prosper with the power of God on your side challenges that very divide, arguing that physical laws governing the universe are the very handwriting of the divine God. So I ask you, Richard, do you believe that the more we understand science, the closer we actually get to understand God?
Well, you need to go back to the religious times of Christ and even before that. What did they know about science? They knew, the only thing they knew was how to charge interest. You know, Christ goes into the temple and he upsets
all. He knocks all the things down, right? Yeah.
Right. That's the only science they knew. It wasn't until the 1600s that Sir Isaac Newton figured out there was a thing called gravity. And so they had no concept of anything. And they're trying to figure out the stars. And back then there was the God of war, the God of love, the God of this, into the Greek world.
I have to throw in the Romans, because my Italian Roman descent, if you're going to go that way, I had to throw in some of those too.
Yeah. And then look at the Indians in this country. They have the God of wind, the God of, So there are all these different gods because man couldn't figure out how to explain what he did not know.
Can I add a piece to that? That's not in my notes, but I think you're going to like it because you made me think right here. What do you think of CERN?
Of what?
The CERN, where they're spinning the molecules and they're creating the God particle. Maybe hence changing our timeline, opening up wormholes, portholes. They're taking science to a whole other level.
Yeah, quantum physics and stuff like that. Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah.
That is phenomenal. I mean,
I've seen CERN. It's an amazing place. I've been there. I've been lucky enough to see it. It's impressive, but it's scary, I think.
I haven't had the opportunity. I get caught up in this quantum theory and the warping of science. I mean, the warping of space and the wormholes and the theories they have and the ultimate numbers of universes that we have that are constantly
expanding. Happening, right? Mandela effect is running wild.
And what?
I mean, the Mandela effect is just running more wild as time goes on. I think all this is tied together.
Yes. So, anyway, looking at the world, man didn't know anything back then when the scriptures were written other than mathematics. And he didn't know calculus at that time. I don't, they were figuring out some of the equations
all his paintings had math in it. Da Vinci,
the paintings,
yeah, Da Vinci's paintings, had physics and geometry and math in every one of them,
right? So they were just starting to, they didn't understand the combination, the chemistry. They were trying to figure out how to make gold. What do they call those? Alchemists,
alchemists, right?
They had very little comprehension of science.
Right.
And what about probability?
Let me ask you a question, Richard. Did you read the book or see the movie Angels and Demons?
No, I didn't.
Dan Brown? Well, you really ought to check that one out, Angels and Demons. It's really good. Rose, what do you want? Do you want to say something on it? My tech here is saying something. What do you want to say about it?
It was one of my favorite books in high school. The angels.
Yeah, it's crazy. The first one, he's the Harvard professor, Dan Brown.
Yeah.
And the first one, he finds the bloodline of Christ, right?
Angels and Demons is a prequel novel set before the first novel.
Right. Are you hearing her, Richard?
No, I'm not. Oh. No.
She's just talking about it's a prequel it's Dan Brown. It's good stuff. What was the first one called? Oh, the Da Vinci Code. Did you see okay, and that where they he finds the bloodline of Christ. It talks about the Knights Templar and all that, which I think ties into what you're talking about, you know, Alchemist, about not being involved in money. The Knights Templar managed the money for the church. I heard. I know. I want to see that. There's another one coming out, Secret of Secrets. Oh, yeah. Don't tell me about it on air. Well, you did see that first one, though, Richard?
No, I didn't. But if we're talking about God and we're talking about religion, specifically the Catholic religion that spawned off into Lutheranism and all the others, sects that we have, my feeling, many people, they love to quote the scriptures. They will quote a scripture for anything that they believe but they won't quote the scriptures are very confusing. And for everything that says one thing, there's another that says something else.
As a meaning,
completely opposite. All right. But it's the ego. But
we all have to agree it exists and it's real.
The zealots love to quote what they want to foster. Right. Now, my feeling is if anyone actually studied the history of the church, you would never walk into another church.
Right.
Because if you go back in
time. I mean, the Bible, Jesus said you don't need to go to a building to worship.
Exactly.
Right.
And now, when was the first book of the New Testament written? Was it right after Christ died? Was it a year later?
Yeah. What about 2 years later? Enoch? What about the book of Enoch?
Well, I'm not familiar with that one.
But you know what, Richard? Hold that thought. We got to take a station break.
Okay.
Just quick, don't pause. Station break. So, folks, you're driving in your car. You're coming back from whatever event you might be. Maybe you went to go see Richard, and you got some hypnosis or biofeedback or whatever. And all of a sudden, them red and blue lights come on behind you. Everybody gets nervous and gets scared. But if you have Attorney Shield, you push one push of a button on any phone that you have, you will have a licensed attorney available on video chat right there within 15 to 30 seconds that will completely handle any interaction you have with law enforcement or the government. Check it out, Attorney Shield. You can put in Attorney Shield and to any Google, anywhere, easy to find. Put in code name Sonati and you'll get 20% off. Next time you're pulled over, you'll wish you had it, Attorney Shield. So Richard, Eric A. Sonati unplugged right here on iHeart dial, on your FM dial. All right, we're back with Richard Koontz. Talk to me. Go on. Continue on.
So the first book of the New Testament, and I'm going by memory because I don't have wasn't written till about 50 years after Christ died. And I forget which book it was, whether it was Mark or Luke or who necessarily.
It was Matthew.
Matthew. That's it, Matt. But 50 years. Do you remember what you
Sister
had
Regina
for breakfast?
Regina taught me well. Shout out to Sister Regina, St. Joe's in Bogota.
So do you remember what you had for breakfast 2 days ago or 3 days ago?
Well, you're asking a guy here that is that some would say is hyperactive, hyperintelligent, gone wild. I can tell you what I ate 3 weeks ago and I wasn't where I was. Yeah.
Well,
it makes some people unhappy that I can do that.
Yeah. So that's 3 weeks, but we're talking 50 years.
Right.
So that's amazing. But nevertheless, there were two sects of the church, the Catholic Church, the Eastern Church and then the Western Church.
Right.
And around 300, 400, again, it's in the book. That's why I wrote the book, so I don't have to remember things.
What's the name of your book, by the way, for the folks that are watching, listening? Again.
Prosper with the Power of God on Your Side.
And where can they find it?
They can find it on Amazon.
Okay. And we will provide a link to that book. We're taking no proceeds. We will provide the link for you in the for the description of the show after. There's any links, Richard, that you want us to have, make sure you forward it over.
We'll do. Okay. Keep going. So there was the Eastern and the Western, Catholic Church. One sect of the Catholic Church, I forget whether it was the Eastern or the Western, believed that Christ was a gifted person. Gifted person.
Right.
The other sect believed in the Trinity. Christ was part of the Trinity. So right. That's an important division there. Then the other sect of church actually use their nuns as prostitutes to acquire funds to build their buildings.
Well, I hope that's not the Catholic Church I'm involved with.
Well, Costantinople came along and he got
Now you go Roman when it's negative.
He just went to war and he just killed them all off. You know, so we only have now the church that likes to manipulate. So then we introduce flagellation, we introduce sin, we introduce all these things to control the population.
And let's also introduce how the Episcopal Church was part of the Catholic Church, and they left because of the king did not want to, A, wanted to get a divorce, and B, did not want power, so much power to one person. That's how we have the Episcopal Church. If you go to an Episcopal Mass, it's the same thing as Catholic Mass.
Exactly.
Really no difference.
If you didn't know, you wouldn't know which one
you would never at. Know. I've gone many times, and they call it Catholic Light. I run into fellow Catholics there all the time.
Yeah. So the idea that one sect actually used nuns as prostitutes, and then the idea that today that's a sin, get thrown in jail, that's how
Here in Vegas, what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas.
Yeah, right. It does spread elsewhere.
The older it was,
prostitution, the germs come back with you.
In America, right? All this business. I don't think I don't see the problem with it. We could tax it and make it a business. We could have licenses, people check for cleanliness, background check, the whole thing, and we could tax it. And it would be regulated and protect the people.
What did we try to do with alcohol?
It didn't work.
It didn't work. What have we been doing with marijuana?
Right, exactly.
How does it work?
I'm with you. When are we going to learn? When are we going to learn?
I don't know.
I don't think ever. Maybe your book will help people learn.
It's all this Puritan thing. This Puritan thing that we should control you. I mean, we have this belief, and unless you believe
the guilt,
this doctrine.
Yeah. Catholic guilt.
Now, of course, all the religious people, they love to quote the Bible, but do they know it's the King James Version, right?
Right. I actually don't use the King James. I use the NIV. And in Catholic school, I used the ones for kids. Can't remember what it was called now. The Good News Bible. The Good News Bible was for kids. It was great.
Do you know how many versions of the Bible
actually? Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah.
Thousands.
Thousands. Yeah.
Not just two, thousands. So which one is right? You know? But the King James.
And we're all, Richard, we're all biased a little bit. I spent 12 years in Catholic school. I'm biased.
Did you get this?
Oof. I'd rather it there because my mom was pretty tough too. I got the chalk. I had this one sister, Sister Ellen was famous. I loved her too. St. Joe's Academy in Bogota, great school. She could from behind throw a piece of chalk without looking. She should have been on the Yankees, like a Rivera or something, because she could throw that without looking and hit you right in the forehead or an eraser. It was simply amazing. I got my butt beat there. But I mean, I think it made me a better man for today. I have morals and ethics.
Well, should we spank them and put them in the corner, or should we, you must have a problem. which is best?
No. I think we need to go back to a less snowflake world, and we need to go back to the Generation X style of growing up, where you came home when the traffic lights went on, you had to be home, and you were out, you spent the day out, and my mom didn't know where I was or what I was doing. I had to be. At 10 o'clock, right? Yep, at Generation Z over here.
Yeah,
remember it was especially in Jersey. You'll remember, and our techs are from Jersey too. It would say at 10 o'clock, do you know where your children are? Mm-hmm. Oh, that's maybe today it should be, do you know what your children are doing? Because they're in the room in God knows what forums doing God knows what. I feared getting in trouble, and I feared my mom, and it kept me straight. And I treat people with respect today because of that.
Back to the Bible. King James.
We were talking that. That was really Catholic school. Yeah.
Yeah.
You asked me a question about being thrown at, beaten, beat. No, that was my story.
Yep. King James, the King James Version is the popular version. And everybody who is religious quotes the passages from the King James Version, but they have no concept or idea how the King James Version of the Bible came about.
Right.
It was King James himself.
Yep, and I think that was written Episcopal. Yeah.
He had to approve every word of the interpretation to King to the Bible.
Yeah.
Now, what kind of king was King James?
Yeah, and you got me there. It's your question.
Well,
King I have my James, opinion, and you're the guest.
King James was a narcissist. He thought that kings were anointed by God and given the power of God. That's who King James was. So now you have a scripture, a spiritual guide that is converted into a power play for King James. And it's been that way ever since.
Is that the one that you prefer to read now?
I don't read any Bible. You know how many versions of the Bible there are?
Oh, there's a bunch, yeah. I did a quick, the King James Version used the old-fashioned formal English and translates word for word in older Hebrew and Greek texts, where the NIV uses modern, easy-to-read language and translates thought for thought using a wider range of ancient manuscripts together. I did a little quick look while I was talking to you here.
Right. And if you look a little bit deeper, King James actually had to approve every word.
Yes. It had to be flattery. It had to be flattery of nothing against him.
Right. Absolutely.
Blasphemy to go against him.
Gave him absolute control. And the merge of he gave the church control and the church gave him control. It was a symbiotic relationship.
And right.
He's dead, but it's still there. And that's how things are today.
They did a little check for me here for you. There's 450 versions of the Bible currently available in English.
450. But
yeah.
Do you know how many versions there are actually of the Bible?
I don't know. Let me see. I have somebody helping me here.
That's a loaded question.
Let's see.
Everybody who reads, they're helping us look up here. There's
3,600 known versions right now available.
But everybody who reads the Bible has their own version.
Yep, 3,600, according to one of my interns.
Right.
And they cited where they got it from, and it looks like a pretty good citation.
But you and I can read the same verse, and we'll have a different take on it. So,
I'm a lawyer, and I can read the law and make it sound the way I want it to work for what I'm doing. So it's kind of the same thing. I tell students when I teach, you got the black line and then you got either side is gray. It's still good.
I think the best book to ever read to get an idea of how the religious control is the Michener's book, Hawaii.
What's that? Say it one more time for me.
James Michener, mm-hmm. his book, Hawaii.
Okay.
If anybody wants to question the power of zealots and
we're hearing that word a lot now, zealot. We're hearing that. And Zionists, we're hearing these words like left and right. Can you define them for the folks? A zealot and a Zionist? Can you define that for the folks?
Not really. That's beyond me.
It wasn't a sneaky question. I was just wondering too, because it's a very hard definition. Everybody has a different perspective.
Yeah, it doesn't matter to me. I know that the zealots, when I grew up, this is like 60 years ago, I'm 79, and in church, we talked about missionaries going into these native countries in Africa where they, weren't even speaking English at that point and converting them into Christians. And there's a doctrine, I forget the name of the doctrine, but it's from the Catholic Church that gives divine right to the English and to Catholics to go into any native population and actually destroy them because they're heathen. Right. So in a sense, we have been doing the same thing as the Islam has, the Ayatollahs, right. since King James. There's not much difference between our religion and Islam. except they're all ego things. They're just beliefs.
We're indoctrination. Every religion believes in Jesus, right?
I don't know.
Of what they think of Jesus, of what they think he was or what he stands for.
Yeah.
I think in the Quran, Jesus is considered a prophet, right?
Yeah, Muhammad. Muhammad, if you study Muhammad, as a youngster, he used to go up into some mountain or something, and it's explained better in the book. I don't remember everything I wrote.
Mount Sinai, but maybe?
Muhammad, as he aged, he actually sent out letters to every country around him that unless they embraced his belief in him as the king or God, that he would destroy them.
Right.
I mean, so right. there is a part of Islam that is very violent, just as there's a part of Christianity that's very violent.
Right. Yeah. So with that, I think we're almost perfectly going to segue into segue two, because it's exactly kind of what we were already getting into. So let's get right to it. And the segment is the questions religion avoids. This book doesn't tiptoe around the tough questions. Clearly, we're not. Even our conversation, we're not tiptoeing around anything. Why do bad things happen to good people? Why are places of worship destroyed by natural disasters? Why do wars continue to persist even in the name of God? And why do some believers suffer while non-believers seem to prosper? So my question to you with those hard to tackle topics, are these tragedies evidence against God, or are they reflections of human misunderstanding about what God truly is?
Well, we think of God, what is God? Some divine power, all-knowing. He's described as a jealous God. He's described as a God who can give you what you want and answer your prayers. Why does a toddler fall into a pool and drown? Why did God let that happen?
Everybody said that, right? That kind of stuff.
Yeah. That Christianity has no answer to that other than why? But why did the toddler fall in? Gravity. And mother wasn't watching.
Right. And then we justify it by saying that it was the time for that toddler, and it was a better place for that child to be. But are those ways that's just all, coping mechanisms?
It's the limited ability to explain reality. The toddler fell in because of gravity, and mother wasn't watching. So we can now what happens to the family? Why did God this happen? So the family could come together and be more loving.
Right.
But on the other hand, most families get into a point of, well, if you were watching, this wouldn't have happened. Well, if you would have been home and wouldn't have called, this wouldn't have happened.
Yeah.
And the family falls apart. So one family can pull together. I'm trying to remember the fellow. He's got the grocery store chain in Connecticut. His child died. Stu Leonard. He had that happen with him, and he and his wife, they championed that cause, and it brought them together. But why did it happen? The law of gravity. Now we have a law of chemistry. We have a law of biology. We have a law of physics. We have a law of the one that we don't realize. Miracles. Where do they come from? Where does a miracle come from? Is it from God? Probability.
Yeah.
When I was writing a book, I was doing some research. Do you think it's possible for a person to fall out of an airplane 1,000 feet and live?
I've actually seen it. Yes, I've seen it happen.
Yeah.
I personally watched somebody at a higher altitude. They're doing a night jump and bolt, or the regular chute didn't go, and the secondary, and he survived. Yeah.
So why did that happen? Probability.
Lord only knows on that one.
And probability.
And after the jump, we all jumped obviously together in a training op. And he jumps, still jumps. I said, man, I think that was the divine telling you this is your last jump. He's like, no, I'm getting back up there.
Yeah. So probability says out of so many jumps out of a million jumps or a million falls from an airplane, there's bound to be one that lives.
Yeah, right.
And then if you're on a stepladder and you fall off the stepladder, the probability of being impaled and dying is maybe 1 in 1,000 or, you know, unlikely, but it does happen. So the law of why does one person win the lottery more than the other? Laws of probability.
Right. And I actually like the laws of probability. I've done a lot of reading on that.
It's a very, very complicated law. Yeah. I kind of flunked that one in college. I just didn't understand it. It's really advanced.
I got to be honest. I excelled. I was not very studious up until college. And then I became extremely studious. But I took all these crazy classes in college. I mean, I have like 5 degrees. And
oh,
I
wow.
Love it. Yeah, I love it. I still am taking classes now.
I love it. I got the second order differential equations and I gave up. It was beyond me.
Yeah, if you were in the studio with me and Rose can attest here, I'm watching the laws of I'm reading laws of physics. I have the most eclectic stuff of things you will ever see.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
There's so many random books.
Yeah, she's saying
all different topics.
She's like, there's so many random books in here of every topic you can think of. And I read them. And I read them differently than other people. I don't read a book from start to finish. I read some, I come off and I go to another, but I always end up finishing them. I love them.
What about the spirit world?
Love the. All right, let's talk about it. Let's go there. Because we have some hauntings on set here.
Yeah. You know, for years, I didn't know, you know. And I have this warehouse.
Let me ask you before you go into it. Do you believe?
Yeah.
Okay, good. So do I.
So
we're on the same page with this one.
Yeah. I have this warehouse. And every time from, not every time, but, you know, like maybe once a year or so, we'd find a door locked that we couldn't figure out why it was locked. And then one day I was in this warehouse. It's 70 feet long, concrete floor. The concrete just slopes slightly to the front to drain the water. And in the middle of this warehouse, I had a pallet jack. Now, a pallet jack weighs about maybe 100 pounds.
Yeah, right. It's not going to get up and walk away.
No. And the pallet that was on it, it was about another 100 pounds, 200 pounds. And I was in the back of the warehouse and something drew my attention and I looked and that damn thing moved at least 10 feet.
Right in front of you, right? You saw it.
And the concrete is not smooth. And it moved away from the slope, uphill.
Right.
There's another world.
I got a funny one, actually. I have a story. That's interesting because I'm a major, major Abraham Lincoln fanatic. Literally my first car, you know, like guys will put a picture of their girlfriend stuffed up into the window mirror on the top left. Mm-hmm. I have, even to this day, I have a picture of Abraham Lincoln in the car looking at me every day to remind me the man I want to be.
Okay.
So as I rose in political things and whatnot, I get great tours in Washington, D.C. I get to go into private parties and get to see things. So I got to go inside of Ford's Theater and I got to go inside the booth where he was actually shot,
mm-hmm.
which was not open to the public. I got a private access tour to that. We took pictures and I actually gave them to the Ford's Theater. Lincoln came out in the pictures.
Really? Wow.
Clear as day with me. Wow. In it, with me. A clear as day in several pictures.
Mm-hmm.
Enough that the theater themselves said they have never, ever, ever had anybody catch like that before. And they did. And we turned it over. And, you know, to be honest, it's not the first time that I've had that happen to me, even with him, which is oddly weird because it happened at a young age. So I believe in spirits. I believe that it's energy, right? If you want to bring physics back into this, energy never dies. When you
vibrations.
Unplug something, it goes somewhere else.
Yeah,
right?
Vibrations. Yep.
Yeah, is that what the Dan Brown is about? The secret code. She's pushing this Dan Brown, the secret code. All right, we'll get there. I love it. Pull it up for me so we can watch it. So anyway, yeah. So So go on more about the spirit realm, because I like it. I like it. I just wanted to tell you that I was a believer, so this way you wouldn't feel like I was going to come at you.
Well, you had shared before that you had a couple of situations where you passed on or came back.
Yeah.
How was that?
I was in a coma for a while in a line of duty injury, and I died and was brought back. And I was in a coma and I experienced some wicked stuff. Yes.
Yeah. So parallel universes. It's all possible. Can you bend a spoon? Can you bend a spoon with your a metal spoon with your mind? I believe it's all possible. How much of our brain do we actually use?
That they say we only use a percentage is actually false. We actually use both hemispheres of our brain, and we use all sections of our brain. We're just not using all of them at the same time.
Well, they say we use about 11%.
Well, actually, that's been dispelled, Richard. That's been dispelled. Actually, we do use 100%, just not 100% of the time.
I agree.
At any given moment.
Well, from working with people and their conflicts and their problems and so forth, we use our brain 100% of the time. But because of the conflicting beliefs and attitudes we have in our brain, we only use it 11%. Right. 80% is used in conflict.
And, you know, I like that, because I want to add a piece to that, and you give me a thought. That's why children will see things, spirits and other things, when we don't, because we are trained societally that this is weird. It's not normal. So our brains automatically block out some of these things. And I think if we had more of an open society in the sense of being open perception and not putting somebody inside of some kind of box if they're considered weird or whatever. Because why did children see ghosts? So remember that movie, I See Dead People, with Bruce Willis? I mean, that was a great movie. I love that movie. But I mean, I think that's like how it is. I think we train ourselves not to see things that we don't want to see.
Our brain very may well be. But when we talk about our relationships and getting along and marriages and people breaking up and things like people say, he cheated on me or she cheated on me, or they're not honest or they're not committed. It's all these preconceived ideas about what we should have in a relationship.
Right.
That what is a relationship? Nobody cheats.
I've talked about this on a lot of my shows. I like where you're going. Nothing's cookie cutter.
There's no cookie cutter.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm doing a little TikTok thing too, and relationship killers, for instance.
Okay.
If you're a jealous individual, what are you looking at her for? What has she got that I ain't got? That relationship.
Every guy looks though. We all do.
Yeah, absolutely. What do you think? I'm nuts.
Doesn't mean we want all that.
What does she got that I haven't got? You know,
I go to a restaurant. I go to Ruth Chris or even Morton Steakhouse, and I'm still. I get a $500 steak. And I still see the steak on the next table. I take a peek. Doesn't mean I'm going to give up my $500 steak. But yeah.
Yeah. Why don't you do it this way? You should have done it that way. You didn't do it right. Backseat drivers. I
mean, what's the book? Men are from Mars, women are from Venus, right?
Mars and Venus.
Our philosophies are completely different.
Yeah.
I mean, we are not the same, which is good. Women don't get that about guys. So, yeah, you hit the nail on the head, Richard, you did.
So our brains work 80% in an opposition to each other, and our belief systems totally. I mean, a relationship comes down to also compatibility. You know, I'm not your slave. You know, the dishwasher's right there. Why'd you leave the cup here? Why are you just going to put the cup in the dishwasher? Why are you leaving it to me? Why am I your slave? Silly things like that. What's a toothbrush? Silly things like that.
Right.
Romantic compatibility, all that kind of stuff.
Right. You ready for segment 3?
Go ahead.
All right. It's going to be beyond labels and division. I thought it was perfect timing when we were talking about, you know, everybody's different way of thinking. Religion often divides more than it unites, but prosper with power of God on your side invites the reader to step in beyond the titles, Jew, Muslim, Christian, atheist, and to see a universal truth behind them all. So I ask you, Richard, when someone abandons these labels to find their own connection to divinity, do they risk losing a community or do they finally find peace without a boundary?
Who are you?
Directly asking me that?
Yeah, well, yeah. Tell me who you are.
I'm Eric A. Sinani. I'm a lawyer. I'm a nationally syndicated commentator. I write the news. I'm an author. I'm a man. I'm a Catholic. I'm American. I'm a veteran.
Okay.
Part of the volunteer fire department, EMT. I mean, yeah, that's me.
You identified who you are via your accomplishments.
Yeah.
All right. Well, if we take away all of your accomplishments, who are you?
A man of honor and integrity, and I will stand for what I believe to the very end. If it means not making it through for somebody else, I'll do that. I will fight for those that cannot fight for themselves and speak for those that can't for themselves.
And
even if at my own peril.
If for some reason that, you know, like remember Christopher Reeves?
Oh, who doesn't remember him? Love Superman.
Yeah. So he was, and he lost, but he was Christopher Reeves. That's who he was. All the other stuff was accomplishments through which we build our self-worth and no knowledge of ourselves. And that's how that's what we're looking for, is the essence of it, like Zen.
Right.
In the moment, living in the moment. That's it.
Right. Good point. I'm going to roll into segment 4 because we are going to be coming to a close shortly. And I want to get in all the good stuff here. We got so much great conversation. I also want to invite you on my other show, The Hostile Zone, which is also a live show on iHeart. I will have my team set that up if you'd like to come on. I have a co-host. She's a singer.
Sure.
And, you know, she brings a little bit of different perspective from the societal kitchen table kind of conversation. Mm-hmm. So this would be great conversation. I'd like to formally invite you on that show. Segment 4, the purpose of suffering and the power of creation. The book presents a provocative idea that we are not being tested by God, but rather we are participants in creation itself. We are energy, awareness, and consciousness in motion, expressions of the same universal force. So with that, Richard, I ask you, if we are extensions of the divine, the conscious, and does that mean that every single choice and decision, thought and action are all through the creator itself? As you can tell, I read your book.
Okay. The creator is you. I am God. You are God. Each of us are God. We're a manifestation of mathematics, chemistry, probability, biology.
Okay.
So there is no one out there. It is our choice. Now, there's a difference between making a choice and making a decision.
Right.
A decision is the horse track. The horse won by a nose. Choice. I choose to be married today. Tomorrow, I might choose to be divorced. But today, I choose to be married. So choice gives you the opportunity to change your mind. And when we look at assertiveness and confidence, building confidence, that's another book I wrote, Confidence Rich. We oftentimes shoot ourselves in the foot because we behave unconfidently. We are the person who opens the door all the time. We are the person who agrees, chameleon. So there are a lot of, and then we go into assertiveness training, and most of us are not assertive.
Right.
Being assertive means that, okay, I'm allowed to choose one thing today and tomorrow or 10 minutes from now, choose differently.
Right. I'm with you on that one. Isn't that the purpose, free will? I mean, that is God, free will. Having free will, the ability to make those decisions yourself, whether they be good or bad.
You know, many people say, well, God gave this to me. Have you ever seen somebody, they can't find their keys. They're looking everywhere for the keys. and they're in their hand. I can't find my keys. They're right there in the hand.
You're supposed to pray too. What's the patron saint for that or something? Isn't there a patron saint for that if I can't find something?
I don't know. But that, you know, God didn't do it. You were so stressed out that you couldn't see what was right in front of you.
Right. St. Anthony. All right. St. Anthony. So
yeah.
All right, cool. So honestly, it totally flows right into our next segment, the awakening of truth. For many, prosper with power of God on your side is both a liberating, but yet unsettling. It challenges the institutions that define faith, revealing truths that have long been hidden or even distorted, right? But it doesn't destroy the belief. It redefines it, inviting the readers to meet God without any intermediary. So, Richard, I'm going to ask you this. Why do you believe that people resist ideas that expand their understanding of God, even when those ideas align with both science and their personal experience?
Indoctrination.
Okay.
Ego. Good. Many people would rather die than be proven wrong.
Sad.
The ego is so powerful. The ego is so powerful that it creates wars, creates dissonance. It has to be right. We have to be right.
Yeah.
The opposite of being open-minded.
Right. Yeah. I don't even have a follow-up on that one because that you hit it on the head there. You hit on the head. And it doesn't matter what religion you are. Everybody's indoctrinated somehow into some belief.
Right.
And it's kind of like what I said before, a child can see the ghost. And you and I were talking about experiences. You know, people are indoctrinated. You're not supposed to see these things. They don't exist. They're not real, blah, blah, blah. You know, here's an interesting factoid of science. And Generation Z over here, Roosevelt, like, this is why he's got a million different books. Do you know the reason why, allegedly, or scientifically, that we have a fear of the dark? There's some genetical science.
Yeah.
Basically, what was it? The Geico commercial where he has the Neanderthal.
Mm-hmm.
Neanderthals used to feed on humans.
Oh, okay. So it's a genetic kind of thing. Neanderthals
see at night, and humans can't.
Right.
So during the early evolution and evolution times, the Neanderthals were hunting on humans.
Right.
So we were hidden caves and whatnot. And that is what some scientists are saying. I kind of like that thought process, that maybe that's how it got ingrained in us over time. You know, I guess the best way to test this is looking back at like 9/11 and what kind of fears people have now for flying and for other types of situations. Mm-hmm. Has that changed based on an incident? Right. I mean, that's kind of the same concept.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, one of the things that I've discovered, and we talk about the brain only uses, I talk about the, we only use 11%, and the other 89% is in direct opposition of each other, right, is because we are emotional cripples.
Emotional intelligence, right.
I have another book. It's called My Dog Got Run Over by a Rainbow. And when I was a youngster, maybe about age 10, my pet dog, Smokey, got run over by a car. And it devastated me. I was, did God let this happen?
Right.
And it just, I didn't know how to hurt. I hurt and hurt for years. And I think many of us, we have emotional baggage. We have something that happens in our life. It could be a crisis or whatever. And we hurt and we don't know how to let it go.
Right.
And when
you're talking to a veteran here. So you're talking about almost like a post-traumatic stress situation.
That's one of my specialties, post-traumatic stress.
I wanted to talk to you about that too. They're still doing the biofeedback stuff?
No, I've retired. I don't do it, but I've got the instruments and I'd love to find somebody who would like to learn and I'd love to teach them.
I would love to learn. I'll take you up on, I'll make any offer.
Okay.
I actually wrote my senior thesis on biofeedback.
Yeah.
And my first bachelor's degree.
Well, the whole idea of self-regulation is amazing, and it is true today. Unfortunately, people would rather go get a pill to do it for them. Right. So they'll go pop Tylenol and the NSAIDs, and all they do is
SSRIs for depression, serotonin, selective serotonin, inhibitors. Yeah.
With depression, there are two kinds of depression. One is situational depression.
Right, situational.
Okay. And the other one, which is amazing, is that it's a conflict of beliefs. The conflict is like, for instance, you might be in a relationship and there is hate. You hate that person for some reason, but you won't allow yourself to feel that hate because you shouldn't hate. You shouldn't hate anybody. It's not right to hate. So without acknowledging that feeling, then you are depressed. And until you can acknowledge that you have hate for somebody that you can move through to love, stuck and depressed.
Yeah, makes a lot of sense. And the situational depression is very important. I'm glad you brought that up because this is normal. This is normal stuff. And so many people make rash decisions. Suicide and other crazy ideas over a situational experience. And it's so sad. And everybody, like you're saying, is trying to just throw a pill to fix it. And that's really not the answer.
Right.
Not the answer. And I'm not anti-pharmaceutical by any means, because there are obviously needs for that. But there's obviously an old school learning to talk through things and learning to process what your brain has. So tell us a little bit about the biofeedback. What would you do with me if I were to do this with you?
Well, generally biofeedback is used for physical ailments like aches and pains, like headaches, or could be a migraine headache. It could be a muscle tension headache, fears and phobias. Fears and phobias are very easy to deal with. In fact, agoraphobia, I became kind of somewhat of an expert in dealing with agoraphobia. And phobia is actually a desensitization. But when it comes to agoraphobia, it's a disease of ignorance. Right. And if simply by educating the individual, like a person having agoraphobia may often have a episode where they feel that they have a heart attack and they are carted off to the hospital and they go through the EKG and everything is fine. And this is constantly repetitive. They can't go out into a store with bright lights and they have this is all a disease of ignorance because they are unfamiliar and unknowingly of how their body works. And once I teach them how their body actually works, because it's the fight or flight response. We're dealing with a fight or flight. Like if you're faced with a saber-toothed tiger, you're going to have the fight or flight. Now, it depends on whether you're better at running or you're better at fighting. If you have martial arts training, well, you're going to punch a tiger in the nose and he's going to run away. Otherwise, you're going to run like hell. But why does... going out in the open space trigger this? Because it was learned and it's the fight or flight. And when the individual actually realizes what your brain is telling you is that you're in this store and your brain is telling you you're going to be attacked by something. The merchandise is going to attack you. You have to stop and think, there's nobody here that's going to fight or attack me. It's kind of like centering yourself.
I want to on that with you, though. I do say on my other show, I talk about 360 times 365, 180 forward, 180 backwards, meaning your head on a swivel 365 days a year, because danger really doesn't take a rest. So I don't think that somebody who is paying attention is being crazy. I think we all need to be hypervigilant to a sense, hypervigilant, because danger does exist. And we are in a very tumultuous time where people want to hurt people.
Well, that's absolutely true. But I'm talking about the guy who won't go on an airplane because he's afraid that it's going to crash, or he won't go over a bridge, drive over a bridge, right, because yeah, he's afraid the bridge is going to attack. And like one fellow I worked with, he was in a restaurant and he had a fish and he swallowed a bone and he almost died. And from that moment on, he had trouble swallowing. Wow. So these are fears that are often learned or sensitized. And it's a matter of desensitizing them, but also re-educating the brain so they can bring it up to date and realize that this is not the way it was. This is different. And turn off the purpose of the subconscious mind is to protect you. And
so how long does it take to learn the biofeedback process? To be a facilitator, I guess, of it.
Well, say, for instance, you have Raynaud's syndrome. That's extreme coldness of the fingers and the toes that often accompanies migraine headaches.
Right.
So there's a combination of muscular tension and vascular tension. Each of us there's a specificity of the stress response. So for instance, if I'm watching a snake, my hands might get cold, but if I'm watching wrestlers on TV, my muscles, I might tense up like this way.
It's almost like a physiological response to some right, sort of outside stimuli.
So when you're looking at other stimuli, these are measurable. So we can put a little temperature thing on your finger, and when you see the snake, you'll see the temperature cool down. So it's a matter of recognizing the stimuli that create the tension. Years ago, I had a situation where I was I was doing biofeedback and teaching how to do biofeedback, and I was traveling into the city, and every time the train would hit the tunnel, there's that whoof.
Oh yeah, that yeah, right.
And I didn't know it at the time, but I clenched my jaw. So this is an unconscious thing, and you're not aware that the brain perceives a fight or flight situation. The jaw would get tense, and then I would have these feelings of almost dizziness or passing out or whatever. Right. With the jaw being tense. So it's a matter of recognizing the stimuli, and then if you respond, letting that be okay, but realizing that you responded rather than being ignorant to the fact that you responded, and then come back to homeostatic level. So it's
homeostatic. I like that. There, we're getting into a little anatomy and physiology now.
Yeah, it's another book. It's not, we can never let go of the stress response. We're always going to respond to stress. The key is to recognize
it, recognizing it's a stressor, and
be aware that. Yeah. Be aware that my muscles are tense, because, for instance, if you took your hand and made a big fist right now, how long do you think you could hold that before you feel pain?
I don't know. Our resident Generation Z tech is trying it right now. She's not that long, I would imagine.
No, well, you're going to
feel that. I do got a question for you. What is the certification that you hold in biofeedback? I know there's the BCIA.
I was a member of the BCIA. I'm no longer practicing, so I'm no longer certified. I haven't practiced biofeedback since for 30 years now.
Oh, I gotcha. Was the certification process difficult?
Not really. You have to learn the physiology of the stress response and the endocrine system and stuff like that. And you have to learn a little bit about the mechanics of the instruments, like the GSR, which is galvanic skin response, how it works, and the EMG, the electromagnetic, how it works and how to hook it up and stuff like that.
It reminds me of the reverse of a polygraph.
Well, the GSR would be one of the instruments in the polygraph.
Right.
Heart monitor, the GSR,
a thing on the fingers for
you put the GSR on the finger. It's a little thing. It measures change in sweat gland activity.
Yeah, sweat, the sweat intake knot. It's pretty intense, pretty intense. And you made me think of that. I've been through a couple of those in my lifetime. So I'm going to give you like 10 seconds because we're about to wrap up. Is there anything you want to let the folks know? Send them any websites or anywhere they want to check. And then I'm going to tell you to stand by in the green room at the end. But yeah, the floor is yours.
All right. Well, thank you. And selfesteemcure.com is one of my websites, and where we talk about building true self-esteem rather than building it on our accomplishments. Because if we build the self-esteem on what we accomplish, those accomplishments can be taken away. Certifications can be revoked and so forth. So it's a matter of building it so that you can feel good and love yourself on a bad hair day. Phobias. What is my book on phobias? It's
And you'll send us all the links to these books too, right?
Yeah, I'll send you the links to the books. You know, I even forgot the name of that book. My passion right now is Morgellons disease and how to get your life back from Morgellons and other skin parasites, which is another topic. Overcome. Another great book is Emotional Eating, because people are, habitual, emotional, and self-defeative eaters. So my book is called The Scale Conspiracy, because you
I love a good conspiracy.
Yeah, you're on this diet and you keep looking at the scale and it looks like the scale is conspiring against you. You think you're gonna drop pounds and you end up gaining pounds. And this is because you haven't learned how to deal with emotions. And I think a lot of my work, except for the Morgellons, is how to be emotionally responsible, how to deal with emotions rather than
emotional intelligence, I guess.
Emotional intelligence. Yeah. You know, the idea is to recognize the emotion, because many of us have beliefs that we shouldn't feel certain emotions. And it's these, Dr. Isaac Newton wrote a book called The Angry Book, which is really fantastic, but we have beliefs that we shouldn't have these emotions. And because of that, we don't let ourselves really feel them. When you allow yourself to feel and experience it, they're gone. They're history. Yeah. I think one of the best trainings I ever had that contributed to my life was the Earhart Seminar Series way back in the 70s and 80s. Unfortunately, I don't think they're around anymore, but that's where a lot of my work has come from.
Well, I'm very interested in your biofeedback. I've read a lot of stuff actually from the Monroe Institute in Virginia, where they have the gateway process, with the binary beats in the brain, mm-hmm. and that kind of thing, how to make the brain adjust. Very interesting stuff. And I think the biofeedback would be interesting. I definitely would be interested to see, some of that stuff and learn from you if you were so kind as to share.
I'll get the instruments out and see if I can get them working again.
Outstanding. All right. Well, Richard, I thank you very much. Again, you're absolutely invited to our other show. I thank you for coming on today. You are really a plethora of information. There's so much to be found. Folks that are watching or listening, you could click on the show and check the description. The links for all of his books will be in there. Is there a website you want to say on air for people to check out your stuff or a way to contact you if they want to reach out to you direct?
Yes, I do have a website that has basically all of my over 50 different CDs and self-help. It's called D as in Dog Stress, StressDoc, like in doc.com, dstress.com.
And we'll be sure to link that in the episode description as well. Well, Richard, I thank you very much. Head off into the green room, and we'll chat at the conclusion. Thank you again.
Thank you, Eric.
Well, folks, what a great show. I think it was a great show. Interesting, thought-provoking, and I hope that it didn't add any non-clarity to people. I hope it provided some clarity. Hope it opened your brain a little bit to think outside the box and to see what it is that you might be pre-programmed to. And I like emotional intelligence. It's almost like the word, it's like the key word of the future. Emotional intelligence, so important. Faith isn't blind obedience. It's not. Some may feel that. You may feel that you were taught that, but it's not just blind obedience. It's being consciously aware. And awareness requires courage. We know that on this show, courage. Awareness requires courage. The courage to ask, to think, and to evolve from where you are today. As a human being, we all, as Americans, or humans in general, our purpose is to be better tomorrow than we were today. And then we've succeeded. We've succeeded. We've evolved. You don't have to completely make a 180 change in your life. Just be a little bit better tomorrow than you were today, and you're evolving. Science explains how this happens. Faith just asks you why. The faith is the why, and the science is the how. Maybe if we married them together more, we might actually have more of an open discussion, open dialogue with many different people. But by searching for the same source, origin creates itself. Life creates itself. We might be able to create a life, but we do not define that life, and we do not say, hey, you're going to have this many fingers or arms. It's already predetermined by genetics and by a higher being. So prosper with power of God on your side reminds us that God is not confined to any doctrine, not confined to a book or stone walls, but is a part of every single atom, the very nucleus of life. God is life. And every thought and every aspect and every feeling and every move forward that we discover something, there's faith behind it. Regardless of what you believe, there's faith. If you wake up a new day, there's still faith because you're going to believe you're going to wake up tomorrow. So you have faith. Because real power isn't given. It's not. No way hands you power, folks. It's realized in your brain, and then it's our job to effectuate it. And the difference between good and evil is when we realize it and we effectuate it. We effectuate it to help others for the greater good, where other people might effectuate it to hurt people. That's the main difference, folks. And let's not forget that. But with that, I thank you for watching Eric A. Sinati Unplugged. I thank you for listening. And I thank you for really being here and daring to enter into a deeper conversation today. I'm Eric A. Sinati, and this has been Unplugged, where courage, straight courage, meets clarity, and truth is always standing tall and unshaken. Be proud, be steadfast, be a patriot. God bless you, every one of you watching and listening, and God bless the United States.